One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
And whenever I have been excited about trivia, this one person has to DM me and undercut me in some way. I want to box you, okay? I'm not kidding. I want to get in the ring with you. You are pissing me off. This is one person that I'm beefing with, okay? This is a direct call out, okay? Whoever you are out there, if you even listen to the podcast, I don't know. You've been terrorizing me on Instagram. But I think what pisses me off the most is that they're wrong.
Dude, where are you? Pick up your phone. We're on a summer party tonight, and you're obviously invited, so call me back.
Okay, I love you.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly summer party for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck, co-hosted by Mango the Gooey Girl. Right now she is playing with the kittens because, yes, we have more co-hosts in the Drosbeck household this week. I just got my new fosters, well, last week I did. Their names are Ladle and Whisk, and they are sweetie pies. They are so friggin' cute. These are my first fosters that haven't come to me pretty sick. So they have been able to play with Mango for much longer than the other kittens were able to, just because the other kittens were sick. So I had to keep them quarantined for so much longer, so they didn't get as much time with Mango before it was time for them to go to their forever homes. But these girls are the cutest, sweetest, funniest things ever. We have Ladle, who she wears a striped shirt. They'll both come up here at some point. They're just running around right now. But Ladle wears a striped shirt because she has a chest plate that actually just got removed today. But she was born with a birth defect that made it so that her sternum caved inwards. So she's had to have a chest plate that is basically like sewn to her bones to help correct that as she grows, but it was just removed today, so she's doing fantastically. And then Whisk is blind, and she only has one eye. The one eye that she does have, though, I am suspicious about how much she can see, because she's very playful, and, you know, she jumps up on high surfaces. Her, like, depth perception is great. She'll, like, follow things around if I'm, like, swinging a toy in front of her. I've never seen her run into anything, or I don't know. She doesn't behave like a blind cat, or how you would think a blind cat would behave. But allegedly, she can only see like some light and shadow out of her one eye. But I don't know. I am a little bit suspicious of her. These two are the cutest things in the whole world, though. When they came to me, Ladle was very social. Right from the jump, she was cool with me. Whisk was scared of me at first. She wasn't hissy or anything. She was just nervous, anxious baby, similar to Mango in a lot of ways. But over the last few days, Whisk has really taken a liking to me. Ladle is also very cuddly and sweet, but she's more like chaos. She wants to run around and jump off the walls and just move 100 miles an hour. Whisk is a little bit more calm. She'll like occasionally have bursts of that kitten energy, but it's not constant for her. Most of the time, she just wants to sit right next to you. And I'm training her to be like, to like being held. So we're getting there. She likes being held by me for like short periods of time now. But we will get there. but she's been following me around the apartment like she's my friggin' shadow. I'll like walk into one room and she immediately follows me, and her and Mango does the same thing. But I was sitting in my bedroom with her and Mango earlier today while Ladle was out getting her chest plate removed. And I was sitting there for like a while, and they're both like, Whisk is sitting behind me on like the back of the chair I was sitting in, and Mango's on my bed. And as I got up, I like started walking and I looked behind me, and they both immediately are like walking side by side, following me, looking up. I was like, this is like the best life ever. I actually can't think of a better way to spend my days than like, you know, just getting to surround myself with the cutest friggin' animals in my perfect little home. Oh, there she is. Ladle's in the back here. You can see her being Miss Crazy with the shirt. And then Whisk is also behind me, but she's too baby, so you can't see her. So we're feeling loved up in this household. We've had a great week together, me and the Fosters. We've also had a great week because, for those of you that give a shit about my trivia journey, which somebody out there does. Somebody out there likes to see an underdog story. I know there's some of you out there, you hating ass bitches, that don't want to see an underdog story, and I'll get to you in a minute. But for a second, let me just flex one of my greatest accomplishments. Truly, something that I am most proud of in my life. This is like top 10 for me. I'm going to lead with this when I introduce myself now. This is so important to me. We just finished competing in this summer season of the New York City Trivia League. During this summer season, there were 720 registered teams, okay? So this is not counting the amount of people that show up to trivia once or never register, even though they are coming to trivia regularly, compete under different team names every single week. These are just the teams that registered. 720 registered teams that played at least two games during the summer season. Oh, we've got a guest that wants to step on my computer screen. The lads on tour, have just finished in seventh place in all of New York City. In all 720 registered teams and all the people that don't ever actually officially register, we are ranked in the top 10. We are in the top fucking 10. Do you hear that? Do you know how many thousands of people play in this league? There's probably at least 3,000 registered players, right? Because we've got each team can have a max of 6 people. Some people don't have 6 people, give and take. I'll give it like at least 3,000 people are consistent players in the league. That's a low ball, right? It is very well, absolutely is more than that, considering all the people that aren't registered, right? But 3,000 minimum. And we are among the very top. You really can't tell me shit. You really cannot tell me shit. I have never been prouder of an accomplishment, maybe in my entire life. I care more about this than the fact that I have a college degree. None of it means anything to me anymore. I am in the top 10 teams of trivia here in New York City. Bro, I love being a fucking nerd. I love it. It's the best thing ever. You can sincerely suck on my little nuts, okay? You can lick and chew and savor my little nutties, okay? Because let me just say, I don't know if this is multiple people or if it's just one person that preys on my fucking downfall, but I see you in my goddamn DMs. I see you, and you are my arch nemesis. And I need you to know that I talk about you to everyone I know. You've infiltrated my psyche, okay? You have, and I am gloating and flexing right now because of you, bitch, okay? To the one person that always finds himself in my fucking DMs whenever I talk about trivia. Whenever I talk about trivia. Whenever I'm excited about anything and I'm like, oh, guys, I'm so excited. We just did this. We just did that. Oh, we won first. There is somebody who slides up into my fucking DMs every time I'm excited about trivia. And they go, sounds good. But the only reason you guys are winning is because Kingsmen don't come anymore. Hello? First of all, I'm not kidding. These comments, this one person, because it's got to be one person because this is crazy. Right? And at first I was like, is this someone that knows me? Like, why do you know what the other team names of people that we've competed with are? But you know what? I was like, I've posted the score sheets enough. I used to, when we first started, post the score sheets every single week on my Instagram. So maybe this person just like committed the other teams that came regularly to memory. It's not that crazy that it could have happened. What is fucking crazy is that you try to undercut my accomplishments by bringing up totally null and void facts. First of all, you are messing with the wrong bitch, okay? You're forgetting that I'm a statistics and data ass person, okay? I save everything, mama. I've got receipts, proof, timeline, and screenshots, so don't try it, okay? When we first started coming to trivia 2 years ago, there was a team that played at our venue that won every single week, and my goal as a person was to someday beat them and to do better than them in the game of trivia. And it was fun. It was a fun motivator at that time to be like, oh yeah, I want to beat them someday. I want to do this. Like, my motivator in trivia has shifted as we've gotten better, as the team has shifted, as it has become a more like competitive sport for me. But at the beginning, our goal was simply to beat Kingsman because they were beasts. They were so fucking smart. And we have beat Kingsman before, for the fucking record. But over time, they stopped coming. They don't play trivia at our bar anymore. I don't know these people, so they might still play trivia, just not at our bar. But they stopped coming to trivia. And I guess this person has noticed, because they keep track of my every fucking move, that they have stopped coming to trivia. And whenever I have been excited about trivia, this one person has to DM me and undercut me in some way and be like, but it's actually not that cool because the only reason you're winning is because Kingsmen aren't here. I want to box you, okay? I'm not kidding. I want to get in the ring with you. You are pissing me off. This is one person that I'm beefing with, okay? This is a direct call out, okay? Whoever you are out there, if you even listen to the podcast, I don't know. You've been terrorizing me on Instagram. But I think what pisses me off the most is that they're wrong. And again, you are messing with the wrong bitch. I have the data. I have the statistics. We have, as a team, slowly improved over time to the point where now we are pulling better numbers than what they used to pull when they would beat us every week. So you specifically can eat and chomp and suckle on my little nuts, because you don't get to undercut my accomplishments. You don't. You don't get to. And fuck you, bitch. Because it's not just part trivia to me. This shit is important. It's a competition. It's a sport. They were a great team. We are also a great team. So you need to commit this one to memory, mama. I'm like sort of joking, but also, isn't that such an annoying comment? It's like actually pissing me off, but also I'm joking. But also, hello, you see someone's excited about something and you're like, not that cool. It's like, can I not be excited about trivia? Some of you are bullies to me. You're bullies to me in my fucking DMs, and just know that I see it and I'm engaging in the beef. Okay, so this was my formal response to my one fucking hater who's been preying on the downfall of the lads on tour. You wish, bitch, okay? I made a Letterman jacket. I made a crew neck. I made a necklace. I made a hat. You actually can't fuck with me. Like, I am owner of the Lads on Tour Enterprises conglomerate media fucking giant, okay? You have no idea what to do with how committed I am to this and how much of a beast I am, okay? You literally don't even know what to do. Your head is exploding. You're panicked and you're like, no, actually you're not that cool. No, I fucking am, bitch. I actually am that cool. And you are panicking because you didn't even realize that someone could be this fucking cool. Like, you are literally panicked right now. And you know what? Keep panicking. Keep fucking panicking. Because I'm here, bitch. And we just came in top 10 in New York City. So nobody can tell me anything for the rest of time. Nobody can tell me fucking anything for the rest of time. And need I remind you that the New York Times did a write-up on the New York City Trivia League like a year ago. And they interviewed all the ex-Jeopardy players that usually end up in the top 10. So just so you fucking know, I could end up on Jeopardy. You literally would never know. I hate a hater ass bitch. God damn it. So anyways, we made it to the championship game. We're playing it this upcoming weekend. And I actually do not give a single shit how we place overall in the championship, because coming in top 10 in the season is what I cared about. And oh my God, I cannot believe we did it. It has been like 2 weeks since I got on the mic. And the last time we spoke, I told you guys that I was headed to Chicago for the Democratic National Convention, which I was invited to attend. It's now been about a week, 2 weeks, pretty much, since I got back. So I've had some time to sit and think and reflect and just take all of it in. And I have so much to talk to you guys about. For starters, I kind of loved Chicago. I didn't get to see that much of it because I had a pretty packed schedule while I was there. But what I did see and eat and experience, I really liked. I thought it was a fun city. I had some really good fucking food in Chicago. I was honestly very impressed. I don't know if I just got fantastic recommendations from people or if I just got lucky. I don't know. But all the food I ate was fantastic. I went to Girl and the Goat and had like some of the best pork belly I have ever had in my life. It was spectacular. And then I went to, I think it's called Pequod's, and I got deep dish there because I read online that that was supposed to be really good deep dish, and it was good. Deep dish is like not my favorite thing, but I needed to get it while I was there. It was great. But what was better was their jalapeno poppers. They had crazy good jalapeno poppers. Jalapeno poppers in my like top 30 foods of all time. I couldn't commit it higher than that because that seems absurd, but it's up there for me. I think I just love cream cheese. Cream cheese bagel is my number one favorite food. Cannot top a cream cheese bagel to me. That is my favorite food. I could eat a bagel for every single meal from now until the rest of my life, and I would never get sick of it. So I think jalapeno poppers are high up for me because I just fucking love cream cheese. But they had some really good ones at Pequod's. Deep dish pizza was fine. Pizza. Deep dish pizza was totally fine. But the jalapeno poppers were really what I was ready to write home about. And then where else did I go? I think it's called the Purple Pig. And I had the best broccoli I've ever had in my life, which is a weird order. I went there in like the middle of the day for lunch and I got a huge plate of broccoli and something else. I honestly forget because I was starstruck by how good the fucking broccoli was. I don't know what came over me, why I was like, yeah, I'm going to order a big plate of fucking broccoli. But something just told me to do it. And I'm so glad I did because it was so good. And you can trust me, right? Because I am not the type of bitch that would sit here and be like, oh, broccoli is so good, if it wasn't actually fucking spectacular, okay? I usually function like a 6-year-old in terms of like how much I love vegetables. They're usually just like a necessity thing and not a love thing. No, I loved this fucking broccoli. Okay. So if you ever get to go to Chicago, go to Girl and the Goat and get the pork belly and go to the Purple Pig and get that goddamn broccoli. Cause it was so good. It was so good. And the jalapeno poppers from Pequod's. But I feel like that would be a crazy trip to make just for some jalapeno poppers, unless you also wanted to try deep dish. Anyways, food really great in Chicago. I would love to go back to Chicago at some point and get to actually explore more of it outside of, you know, all the political events and things I was going to that week. Fun city, all about it. Shout out to Chicago. I think my number one highlight for the week was the kinds of people that I met while I was there. I met so many creators, organizers, advocates that care so fucking deeply, and they are also insanely brilliant, insanely smart. And I was just excited and eager to be in conversation with these people, to get to listen and observe and just like take it all in. My social anxiety was through the roof, which I had anticipated that it would be. I made a deal with myself, which when I have really like high social anxiety about something, I'll make like deals inside my head of things I have to check off on my to-do list before I'm allowed to like leave an event or decide that I'm I don't know, if something's not for me or whatever. I need to like give things a fair shake and actually try to bust through my anxiety before just like giving it up and calling it a day or whatever. And I had like so many events on my calendar and I didn't know anybody that was going. So I just had to walk into all of these rooms completely by myself and like make it work. So I told myself that everywhere that I went, I had to stay there for at least an hour. During that hour, I had to talk to at least three new people. Once I had done those two things, if I was having a great time, I should commit myself to staying longer. And if I felt that I had had enough, then I could absolutely go home. And you know, I feel like I did a really good job of sticking to that rule for myself and like trying my hardest to just put myself out there and try to, I don't know, work against my social anxiety as much as humanly possible. So I'm proud of myself for that. I didn't actually go into the convention for the first 2 days. So Monday and Tuesday, I had a lot of like off-site events that I was scheduled to go to. And then I didn't actually make it into the convention center until Wednesday and Thursday. So Wednesday was the day that Tim Walz spoke, and then Thursday was when Kamala Harris spoke. So I was there in the building for both of those days. But Monday and Tuesday, I was out and about doing a lot of other events, all like political, surrounded around the DNC, but they were external programming happening elsewhere. So when I wasn't in the building, I even when I was in the building, I like constantly had a Passons stream. And so Monday and Tuesday, I feel like I experienced the DNC mostly via Hassan and just watching through his lens. And then Wednesday and Thursday, I was sitting in the fucking crowd pulling up my Hassan stream because I could see him in like the little booth. And I'm like, I'm a Hassanabi head, okay? And so I was on my phone and I was like looking and I can see him in the booth. And I was like, no, but like, is that him? And then I saw that there was a second person that came over and they're wearing the same color shirts. And I pull up his stream and there's a second person there. So I was like, oh, that's fucking Hassan. So cool. I think Hassan is like so smart and so entertaining. And I've been watching his stream for a long time now. So that was also cool to just like be there while Hassan was there and get to experience it for myself, but also still experience it with his commentary and perspective as well, because he's someone that I think is really smart. And then while I was there, I went to two parties. I went to one that was like a creator kickoff party that was a social nightmare for me, but we pushed through, we made it work. And I saw Philip DeFranco at that party and I was like, whoa, that's crazy. I'm like a YouTube fan before I am anything else. So all of a sudden when I'm like at the bar and Philip DeFranco's standing next to me, I'm like, that's crazy. Like, why the fuck is Philip DeFranco standing next to me right now? Like, that's crazy. I watched Philip DeFranco when I was in fucking high school, bro. I didn't say anything. I was too nervous. I was too scared. But I was like, whoa, seeing all the creators there that I like watch and consume content of or have in the past, and just like being way too scared to tell any of them that I like their videos or whatever. Oh God, I'm so embarrassing. But I admired them from a distance and was just like, wow, it's cool to be here and like see these people that I consume the content of. And then I went to the Hotties for Harris party, which was interesting. I don't know if you guys saw any photos or videos from that party, but they basically just rented out a warehouse and like memeified the shit out of it. They went so far down the meme hole, they TikTokified Kamala's campaign basically. And it was interesting. That kind of shit makes me feel weird. I think I posted some pictures on my story on Instagram and I captioned them, a lot happening here or something. Because it's just like overwhelming to see all that. Because I'm like, yo, guys, we're talking about politicians right now. They are not that fucking cool. Like, they work for us. We're here out of necessity. Like, this is the way our government functions. I don't idolize these people, though, nor is like voting them into office something that really excites me. Again, it's more of like a necessity thing, strategic thing more than anything. So there's something about the like memification of it all that sort of sends me for a loop, because I'm like, whoa, guys, this is getting a little close to what the Trump supporters do in like their deeply committed like reverence for him, where he can do no wrong and they just worship him and love him and he's like a real celebrity to them. No, I think that is bad. I think we shouldn't do that. And I think that the Hotties for Harris party, there was definitely some aspects of it that I was like, okay, I think we need to ground ourselves in the fact that these are politicians we're talking about, and that I don't know if like making all of this so memeified and lighthearted is a great idea, when at the end of the day, like, politics is not lighthearted at all. And I think it's fine to support and like, you know, rally for whoever you are going to be voting for, whoever your candidate is. But there is like some, I don't know, just like meme brained line that gets crossed where people go full content brain with it. And I'm like, guys, these are politicians. But I will say, there was a sex tarot reader at the Hotties for Harris party, and I fear she put a hex on me, because she came up to me and she was like, do you want a reading? And she pulled a card for me, and the card that she pulled was reverse cowgirl. And I was like, well, okay, I've just been cursed for a lifetime, because what the fuck do you mean the card that you just pulled was reverse cowgirl, possibly the worst position? Like, I actually can't think of a position I want to do less than reverse cowgirl. Why this hex was put on me at a fucking Hotties for Harris party, I couldn't tell you, okay? All I know is that it was a curse that was placed upon me, and I knew it the second that it happened. And I was there. I knew nobody. So I'm, like, walking around this party with a little drink in my hand, trying to bop around to the Charlie XCX music that's playing. Like, no idea how to insert myself in all these conversations where there's, like, groups of people talking. Couldn't be fucked. Couldn't tell you how to do that. So I'm like walking around, this sex tarot reader's like, oh, she looks vulnerable. Yeah, this girl's just walking around by herself. Let me traumatize her by pulling the reverse cowgirl card for her. Weird vibes. Wasn't a huge fan, to be honest. But days 3 and 4, I was inside the convention center, which was a very cool experience. I think it was interesting to be able to observe history as it's happening right in front of you. I was excited to be there and just listen and react. It was a very emotional thing to be a part of. There were a lot of really great protests happening both inside and around the convention center throughout the week. In the circles that I was a part of, this was like a constant topic of conversation, and one that at least the people that I was interacting with were largely in support of. I think there were a lot of people in that building, particularly the creators and the people that are sort of one step removed from the like politicians that are there. I think those people were wildly supportive and in favor of the protests that were happening. With that said, there was a lot of nonsense that was happening at the convention itself. Obviously, there was a lot of fucking nonsense. So let's dive into some of it. On like the first day of the convention, I believe, you guys probably saw this clip, some delegates held up a sign that said "Stop Arming Israel," and other people immediately were like trying to block the sign and take it down. I saw other people walking around the convention center with like handwritten signs. Obviously, there's a lot of people wearing clothing in support of Palestinians, and they're wearing pins, and like visually walking around the center, you are seeing people like in constant like visual support of Palestinians and an arms embargo. Bernie had mentioned it in his speech, and probably most notably, there was a campaign to allow one of the Palestinian American delegates, Rua Roman, state representative from Georgia, to give a speech at some point during the convention, which would have been really fantastic. And it was really disappointing when that didn't end up happening. The last day leading up to Kamala's speech, that was like the biggest thing on everybody's minds, whether or not they were going to let this delegate speak. And she published her speech that she wanted to give, and it was pretty awesome. I thought it was a fantastic speech. I thought that it was such a mistake that they didn't give her that platform and that space. I thought that she would have been like a wonderful person to sort of lead the conversation there. She was already doing so much work throughout the week with the Uncommitted movement. And overall, it was just like such a fucking shame that they didn't give her the platform at some point during the DNC. I think day three of the convention, the night that Tim Walz spoke, was the only day that I left the convention center being like, okay, fucking, he got me. I'm feeling libbed up right now. Like, he triggered the like sleeping liberal inside of me. And he got me feeling fired up. Day three of the convention, I left feeling like genuinely excited because I just fucking like Tim Walz, and I like that he can't be bought. And how different he is from most politicians that we've seen, particularly politicians that end up, you know, potentially in the Oval Office. But then we reach day four, and obviously all of these protests are happening. The Palestinian American delegate doesn't end up being able to speak. And then we get to Kamala's speech. And this was a weird one. It was a weird one to be in the room for, because she starts out fine. She says, you know, a lot of things that I agree with. I'm following. I'm there. And then we get to the topic of the genocide happening in Gaza. And she starts by saying something about the ceasefire and how they've been working around the clock to secure a ceasefire deal. And then she moves on to say something about how she will always support Israel's right to defend itself. And when she says this, the crowd just like erupts in cheers. And that was a moment for me that felt particularly disorienting. Being in a room full of people, a stadium full of people, there are concerts that are done in this center. That is the amount of people that are in that room. Hearing our current vice president and potential next president to be say something like that, to have such an enthusiastic response, it just was unexplainably upsetting to me. So I was very emotional during this speech, and not out of excitement, out of like frustration and exhaustion and just like sadness for all of it, and like how fucked up it all is to call for a ceasefire and then be like, oh, but I'm still gonna send them weapons though, is crazy. That is crazy, and it's so upsetting, and it is unbelievable to me the like kind of response it got in the room. I think, you know, you sit at home and you watch the videos of her speech, but to be in that room and to feel the excitement and the response to that part of her speech was like deeply wrong to me in a way that really upset me. It was so hard to hold space for those emotions and that anger, and also hold space for knowing what comes next and knowing what is at stake in this upcoming election. It is incredibly conflicting. It's not inspiring. And I feel a lot of personal frustration and anger towards our government and the current situation that we're in, the state of this upcoming election. I have a lot of criticisms for Kamala Harris, for the current administration and for the campaign that she is currently running. And if you were keeping up with me on Instagram throughout the week, I'm sure that criticism is obvious. I was posting constantly my criticism and pushback on Kamala Harris throughout the week that I was at the DNC. Despite my clear criticism of her, I am also going to support her in the upcoming election. So let me talk about why. Within leftist spaces specifically, there seems to be two camps of people, neither of which I have a problem with, to be clear. and neither of which are more moral than the other. These are just two ways of approaching the election. You have some people that look at voting as being strictly strategic. Something that I've been hearing over and over again is that we have to remember when we go to the polls in November that we are not voting for who we would most want to be our friend, who we idolize, none of that. These are politicians, and we are voting for who we want to be our opponent. Who do we want to fight against? Because this country is corrupt by default. Whoever gets elected into office, they are immediately complicit in all of the corruption and all of the destruction that is happening in the world at the hands of the U.S. It is our job to vote someone into the highest amount of power in this country that we feel the most equipped to fight against. They are our opponent, not our inspiration. And then there's the other camp of people that remain undecided until election day because they feel that the Democratic nominee really has to earn their vote by making steps towards change and achieving the list of demands that they have in order to have their vote earned. And these are very reasonable demands. If they are not met, they will not show up to vote. I do not personally view either of these two things as being more moral than the other. Ultimately, I think we are on the same team. We believe the same things at our core, and we are just trying to figure out the best path forward in achieving a brighter, more optimistic future for this country. So before I jump into how my brain has been sorting through all of this, I want to make clear that I do not judge any other leftist that might be approaching this election differently than I am. Ultimately, I know that you and I, speaking directly to other leftists, believe the same things and are working towards the same kind of progress. To be honest, I find a lot of the leftist versus leftist discussion to be kind of distracting and ultimately pulls us away from knowing who our real opponents are and who our real threats are, especially being less than 60 days away from election day, I believe, at the time this podcast is going live. We believe the same things. Our hearts are in the same place. I am not concerned about policing what other leftists are choosing to do in this election, and I don't think you should either. Come November, we will have two options, Kamala Harris or Donald Trump. Yes, I know you can vote third party if you would like to, but understanding reasonably, if I look into the future, what's going to happen come November, it's going to be one of these two. I am not saying that I love the two-party system. I for sure fucking don't. But that is the system this country uses. So come November, we will end up with one of these two people as our next president. If Donald Trump were to find his way back into the office, there would be so much at stake. And let me be clear, there's a lot at stake with both of these candidates. But let's focus specifically on Donald Trump first. The climate crisis, reproductive freedoms, gun safety, healthcare and gender-affirming care, public education, the ability to protest and to get out there and vote for who we the people deem fit to serve us. All of that and more is going to be at risk with Donald Trump back in office. And perhaps what is the most damning of it all, and for me, this is really what makes it like an open and shut discussion, is that during the next administration, there will be 2 to 3 Supreme Court seats turned over. Meaning that the next president will get to appoint 2 to 3 new Supreme Court justices. There are 9 Supreme Court seats. Donald Trump has appointed 3 of them. If Donald Trump is back in office, that would mean that Donald Trump has appointed more than half of the United States Supreme Court. What that effectively means is that it would take, at the very least, the rest of my lifetime to even begin undoing the damage that would cause to our democracy. And obviously, there is so much rage and sadness and frustration and just complete devastation at the current state of the political landscape in the U.S., how our elections work, how our government behaves. It is maddening, and it's really scary, and it's not inspiring by any means. I am not excited to go vote come November, but I recognize the very real threat that Donald Trump poses to the long-term trajectory of this country. And it sucks. It fucking sucks because we have two candidates on the ballot knowing that it's going to be one of these two. And they both have really fucking shitty and harmful takes when it comes to the genocide going on in Gaza. It fucking sucks that we do not have a candidate that is ready to accurately represent the American people and what we want. Because I don't think the majority of Americans support this. I don't think the majority of Americans love the fact that our tax dollars are going to funding a genocide. So knowing that both of our candidates have shitty takes on that, you have to look at all of the other things that are also at stake. I understand that there are some people that are going to want me to get on here and encourage people to either not vote or to vote third party. And I'm going to tell you why I'm not doing that. Number one, voting is really important. Whether or not you vote in the presidential election, sort of not what I'm talking about. Voting down ballot, participating in your state and local elections is so fucking important. And that is the easiest and most direct way that you can help enact change in your immediate community and, you know, your larger community country as well. I will never encourage people not to vote because I do think that voting is extremely important. If you've never voted, if this is your first time voting, if you don't know if you are registered to vote, if you moved, I'm going to leave resources in the description of this podcast episode that you can check your voter registration or get registered if you are not yet registered to vote. Looking at the presidential is one thing. We can talk about that separately. But you need to vote in your state and local elections 100% because that is really where you have the ability to make the most direct and immediate change to your community. And the second reason why I won't do that is because I have an audience of people that exist all over the globe, all over this country, live in all kinds of different places. I live in New York City. Before I lived in New York, before I was registered to vote in New York, I lived in Massachusetts and was registered to vote in Massachusetts. Both of these are very blue states where my vote didn't hold a lot of weight. Both of these states will go blue no matter what. So who I vote for in the presidential election doesn't really matter. However, that is not true for a lot of people who consume my content. A lot of people that consume my content live in red states, live in swing states, and their vote means a lot more than my vote does or the votes of, you know, some other people that watch my content that maybe also live in very blue states that their vote doesn't hold as much weight, unfortunately, because the whole fucking system is broken. And as I said earlier, I completely understand why there are people that either don't want to vote in this election, they're not feeling inspired to, they're not loving the campaign that Kamala is running, they're not feeling aligned or motivated to actually get their ass to the polls in November. I get why people feel that way. And as long as you're not in a swing state, I really don't give a fuck what you do, to be honest with you. If you're not in a swing state, you can do whatever the hell you want. I hope that you will get out and vote in your state and local elections. But as far as the presidential election goes, as long as you're not in a swing state, I really don't care what you do. But that being said, when I come on this podcast, when I go on my main channel, when I go on my Instagram and I'm talking about stuff like this, I understand that the people that are consuming my content are coming from all over. And a lot of them are living in much more vulnerable positions in this country than I am. So to the people that would like me to come on here and take a different stance, to the people that want me to tell people not to vote or to vote people third party, I don't think that it would be a great call for me, a white cisgender woman who has always known security in her life, to sit in my one bedroom apartment in Brooklyn, New York City, in a state that will go blue no matter what, and tell my audience of hundreds of thousands of people to not vote or vote third party, knowing that if Donald Trump gets elected, it is not people like me that will be the most impacted. I cannot get on here and encourage people to do things or behave in ways that could negatively impact the most vulnerable people in this country. I am a very privileged person. I am someone who has been afforded a life that protects me from a lot of the terrible things that go on in this country. I can't knowingly sit here and encourage you guys to opt out of this election, knowing the travesty that would be Donald Trump getting elected and how people in the middle of this country would be negatively impacted by him being elected. But again, I completely understand why people feel differently. And so long as you are not in a swing state, I don't care what the hell you do. If you are in a swing state, please, for the love of God, vote for Kamala Harris. I will say that directly, because Donald Trump can't be president again. He just fucking cannot. He is an extremist, and putting him back in office poses such an incredible long-term threat to this country. But beyond that, I get it. And I hope that you understand that the reason why I'm approaching this election in the way that I am is because I'm aware of my platform and the influence that I have. And I believe that I am obligated to move in a certain way, knowing that I have people from all over the country that watch my videos and are listening to the words I'm saying right now. I think it's important to be honest about all of it, right? I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm fucking excited about any of this. I'm not. I feel incredibly conflicted about it. But knowing that come November, it's either going to be Kamala Harris or Donald Trump winning this election and being at the fucking helm of the country come January, what feels the most important right now is to use my platform, not necessarily in support of Kamala, but in opposition to Trump. Our politicians work for us. I don't think they're there to be idolized. I think they're there to be criticized like fucking hell. So now I want to talk to the people that are staunch Kamala supporters and refuse to hear any criticism about her, or maybe even believe that anybody offering Kamala criticism, the protests happening, any of these people that are calling into question her moral compass and how she's been moving in the current administration, how her campaign with Tim Walz has been going, to the people who look at people protesting her and criticizing her and they are saying, oh, well, fuck you for criticizing her, and if she loses in this election, it's going to be your fault. To those people, respectfully, settle the fuck down. There is a lot to criticize Kamala for. These people work for us. We're supposed to criticize them. We're supposed to push them on the issues that we care about. To not criticize a politician is crazy. To encourage people not to criticize politicians is crazy and is harmful. The protesting is fantastic. The pushback is fantastic. The criticism is fantastic. All of these things are necessary to push our politicians farther left and closer to a future that is better aligned with the one that you and I want. Because right now, I'm not seeing it, okay? It's pretty fucking bleak. It's not exciting. It's not inspiring. I'll keep saying it. I feel incredibly conflicted. It just sort of is like, this is where we're at, and these are our options and our path forward. So what are we going to do? Knowing that this is happening and there's nothing we can do to stop it, what are we going to do to set ourselves up to be able to fight back in the best way come, you know, whenever the next president is sworn into office? I think it is our responsibility to hold two things to be true at once. More than two things to be true at once. There are hundreds of things that are true at once. But we need to hold space for multiple things to be true at the same time. Donald Trump, under no circumstances, can be put back in the White House. And we must push and criticize Kamala Harris like hell to better represent the American people. I don't think that anybody should ever sit back and offer 100% support to a political candidate. I don't think that's a good idea. They're not gods. They're not celebrities. They're not idols. They're not icons. They are politicians. Most of them are incredibly corrupt. And regardless of whether they are or aren't corrupt on an individual level, the second they are elected into office, they are complicit in the corruption that is innate in being American, as being a part of the United States government. Ultimately, it is the fault of our government for putting us in a position where we choose to force between morality and safety. That is an impossible decision to make. I will not be judging other leftists, other people that believe the same shit that I do, for making an impossible decision. I won't do that. Project 2025 and a Donald Trump presidency would destroy this country in a way that would take, again, longer than my lifetime to rebuild from. Because let me remind you, there are 2 to 3 Supreme Court seats being turned over during the next administration. That panics me. I'm really scared about that. I'm really scared if the power to appoint those seats is put in the hands of Donald Trump. I'm terrified of that. So please, if you take anything away from this conversation, let it be this. Number one, please register to vote, because voting matters and it does have a larger impact on this country, particularly how you vote in state and local elections. Those are the most important. I need you to vote in those elections, me personally. Check your voter registration. Get registered to vote if you are not already. It is important to vote. This is true. The second thing I want you to take away is that it is important to criticize our politicians. It is important to criticize them both often and generously. There should never come a time where you idolize a politician to the point where you see no flaws in them and no opportunity for criticism to occur. And the third thing I want to leave you with here is just a request that in the comments of this podcast, you treat each other with kindness. Discussion is great. Disagreement is great. I do not think it is a great use of time to fight with other leftists in my comment section. How do we make sure that Donald Trump doesn't get elected? And how do we hold ourselves accountable to promising to push Kamala as left as humanly fucking possible, to criticize her and protest and stay actively engaged and involved in the conversations that are going on? Please do not let your activism start and end in someone's comment section. You need to be engaging in these discussions offline. I hope that you are talking to your friends, that you are talking to your family members, that you are getting involved in your community in whatever way you possibly can. It takes a village and everyone contributes in different ways. That's where I'm at. That's what I'm feeling. I appreciate all of you that engaged with me and my content during the week I was at the DNC. I read all of my DMs. I read all of your comments. And I appreciate those of you that were engaging meaningfully, asking me good questions, and staying passionate and staying involved. I think that's what's most important. So I appreciate that you guys showed up in that way. Now, this is going to be my lone acknowledgement of the very small minority of people that refuse to engage in political conversations with any kind of nuance. It is not my job to be a mirror for you. I am not a mirror for you. It is my job to get up on here on my platform and use my voice in a way that I can feel proud of, in a way that aligns best with what I think is right. All I can do is what I think is best, right? All I can do is try to do my best. And that is what I always promise to do. I can't promise you're always going to agree with me. I can't promise I'll always make the right calls, but I always promise that I'm trying to. I hope that you understand why I will not sit in my apartment in Brooklyn holding all of the privileges that I do and place my own morality over the lived realities of vulnerable Americans. I hope you understand why I won't be doing that with the platform that I have. There are plenty of people that watch my videos whose lives would be destroyed by a Donald Trump presidency. It is not my job to be just like you. It is my job to show up honestly and try my best to approach things with empathy and nuance and heart. That is what I'm trying to do. And I hope that you understand my perspective. And if you don't, that's also okay. But this is where I'm sitting with this. So I'm going to end this segment by dropping links both to check your registration, your voter registration, or get registered to vote if you're not already registered to vote, and also some links to Palestinian relief, because the genocide going on in Gaza is heartbreaking. It's maddening. And is a major topic of conversation in our current election, regardless of the fact that both of our candidates have shitty fucking takes on it. This is still happening. This requires your attention. And if you have the ability to donate relief, to help, to engage, please do. And if you don't have the means, just keep paying attention and keep talking online and offline. But I'm going to put that emphasis on offline. Love you guys. Thank you for listening. Thank you for discussing. Thank you for disagreeing. Thank you for leading with kindness in advance. Please take care of yourselves, and I will see you in next week's episode. Bye. Okay.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.